A trick question to begin with. Is Putin winning the war in Ukraine or losing the war? Now, you will have to be a real diehard Putin fan to say that he's winning, because so few people in the world are saying that he's winning. Not even the Iranians and maybe the Belarusians, even they are not saying that he's winning the war. He's not winning the war. Then second, is he stalemated in Ukraine? I don't think there can be any doubt about that. He's been stalemated there for quite some time. But is he losing the war? Indications right now is that at least he thinks he's losing the war. And if he thinks he's losing the war, then hey, what does it mean? That Putin is losing the war in Ukraine. Now, it's not just because all of the Western media says it, and you might say that Western media is against Putin. Obviously, it's against Putin. But it's from all the evidence that you see. There is satellite evidence, there is open source intelligence evidence, there is all kinds of evidence, but also you know how is Putin reacting. Because Putin has now unleashed the N word, the nuclear word. Now, when does anybody, any country, nuclear weapons power unleash the N word? That is when that country thinks it's about to lose a war. That means when that country thinks that I am going, or that leader of that country, whose fate, personal fate also, is linked to that war, thinks that the end is coming or the defeat is coming, that's when they say, look, I will use nuclear weapons. So in the classical sense, nuclear weapons are the insurance for a state against defeat, or against defeat, say in the case of India, against another power using nuclear weapons against India, because India has a no first use doctrine that unless somebody uses nuclear weapons on us, we will not use nuclear weapons. We think conventionally we are good enough to defend ourselves or to achieve our military objectives. But when a country says that I will use nuclear weapons when there is an existential threat to my country, that is a different issue. Now, in Russia's case, Russia's nuclear doctrine says that it can use nuclear weapons even in the course of a conventional war if it sees an existential threat to the Russian state. Now, that stage hasn't come, because it's not as if Ukrainian armies are now streaming into Russia and about to overrun Moscow. No such thing. No such thing is a possibility either. So Putin now, by brandishing the nuclear sword, is indicating that he thinks that he's losing the war. So right now, it may be blackmail to say, listen, I will get very angry and you don't know what will happen when I get angry. I will throw all this stuff at the Ukrainians or someplace else. Don't treat it as a bluff. But the fact is that things have become so bad for him tactically and on the ground that he might actually be thinking right now that of an off-ramp. And what is an off-ramp for him? An off-ramp for him, earlier he might have thought, will be that I have captured most of the Donetsk and Luhansk area. So I will declare victory and I will say this is mine. I have already annexed it by passing a decree and by passing it in my parliament. So I will say this is mine. And if you try and take it, you are coming into my territory. The problem with him is that militarily on the ground, he suffered so badly. And he's continuing to suffer. And in fact, his suffering, which means suffering of his forces on the ground, is getting worse. So they had that big setback in Izium, then in Lyman, and now it looks like their big forces, nearly 25 to 30,000 in Kherson area, are being encircled as well and have their backs to the wall. I will talk about it briefly in the second half of this episode of CTC. But the fact is, he's staring tactical military defeat. That's why he's now using what is the loser's insurance. Because big powers don't use nuclear weapons. Now, you might say that, oh, Shekhar Gupta, what are you saying? The Americans used it at the end of the Second World War. But remember, the Americans used it when they had already won the war. They had already won the war. They just wanted to finish the formalities quickly in Japan. Maybe if you are cynical, they also wanted to test their weapons, tell the world that they had these terrible weapons now. So there is a complex history to that period. But since then, almost 80 years have passed. And nuclear weapons have been acquired by many states now. Not just the P5 as they were called, but after that, Pakistan, India. I'm putting Pakistan ahead of India because Pakistan sort of weaponized ahead of India. India followed. So Pakistan, India, Israel, North Korea, Iran is not far away from there. South Africa had come close to it in the apartheid regime and they gave it away. There was a time when Ukraine had the largest number of nuclear weapons outside of the United States. They gave those away. They returned those to the Russians in return for a guarantee, a multinational guarantee to which Russia was a signatory. So much history has taken place. Now, the only country which has lately, in the past four decades or so, sort of done nuclear saber rattling is Pakistan. And Pakistan has done it usually to say that, listen, you Indians, I know that conventionally you are much more superior to us, but if you try and use your conventional advantage over me, I will use nuclear weapons early in a war. There was a time in 1990 when Pakistan was quite sure that India had not yet weaponized, India did not have a weapon ready, and Pakistan had tried nuclear blackmail with India by sending a message to India through Bob Gates, who was the number two in the CIA then. And the message was that in case there is a war now, we will start it with a nuclear strike on India. And their idea was that you will get so pulverized that you will not be able to fight back and you will hand over Kashmir to us. But at that point, even VP Singh's very weak government was able to stand up to it. In fact, there was a famous line that VP Singh spoke in parliament because Benazir Bhutto, who was then Prime Minister of Pakistan, she had said that she had repeated her father's threat of waging a 1,000-year war against India. And VP Singh had said in parliament, in our parliament, he had said that, look, those who boast about waging 1,000-year wars, they should calculate if they will last even a 1,000-hour war. So that was the last time then that we saw a country hold out a nuclear weapon threat when a conventional war had not even begun. In this case, a conventional war is going on. Except that in this case, the conventional war has been launched by the side that is now threatening to use nuclear weapons. So is it better than Pakistan 1990 or worse than Pakistan 1990? I would say this is worse than Pakistan 1990. Pakistan was using the nuclear blackmail before starting a conventional war. In this case, Putin is trying the same nuclear blackmail after having launched a conventional war and having come close to defeat on the ground. In fact, the defeat on the ground is now quite evident because everywhere it is his occupation forces who are on the run. In fact, if you see the Battle of Lyman, his troops fought very little. IZM, his troops fought very little. There is no guarantee that they will fight any better in Kherson because there is a certain loss of will. And you know what General Sundarji taught us very early on, and it's a conversation that I've mentioned many times while he was around. He said that the most infectious virus in the world is fear. Fear, negativity, loss of morale. You can give it any name. And that's what's happening with Russian troops on the ground. And that is what Putin is now worried about. And he thinks that his off-ramp now is the threat of nuclearization of this war, because in this case, I am the only one who has nuclear weapons. Now, what happens is that if he uses nuclear weapons, there might be a response. What can the response be? We'll talk about that. But right now, we are looking at what is it that he could do and what kind of nuclear weapons does he have. So there is a story in the Washington Post by Karun Dimirijian, which I'm sharing with you. Also, there is a story from Wall Street Journal, Al Jazeera, many others which I am sharing with you. You can read those. So I am not going into the details of all of those. But the fact is that the scare to some extent has now spread. This threat right now is being taken seriously by international community and definitely by the Ukrainians. So in Ukraine, in Kyiv, for example, the government is distributing bottles of potassium iodide pills. Now there is a belief that if you are exposed to radiation, you take these pills, they help you absorb this radiation. Of course, it depends on how much radiation and how far are you from that radiation. In Kyiv, they are also readying nuclear war shelters. Remember, Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union, so they have a lot of facilities built from Cold War days for nuclear warfare. So they are getting all of that ready. There are also occasional scares when you see a big armored train moving through central Russia. People think tactical nuclear weapons are now being moved to the battlefield. That last one turned out to be a fake scare. But the fact is, nobody is looking at this as a bluff. So this Washington Post article has a quote. So this is the line from Putin which has got everybody worried. And I quote, it says, "This is not a bluff. And those who try to blackmail us with nuclear weapons should know that the weather vane can turn and point towards them." Now, the fact is, all the experts across the world are now checking this out. And they're all waking up, because all of these decades, they all thought that a nuclear war was no longer possible, that nuclear weapons were an insurance. Nobody will use these. In fact, that's the view we've had in India as well. And that's a very mature view. And that's why the Indian no first use doctrine, because the thing with nuclear weapons is that you can start a nuclear war. You can use a weapon, but you have no knowing how this will end and where this will end. And also, you can't just say that I'm using a tiny nuclear weapon. Boss, itni badi baat kya hai, maine ek zara zor se jhapad maar diya. It doesn't stop like that, because crossing the nuclear threshold is crossing the nuclear threshold. So if you read the Indian nuclear doctrine, which is publicly available, it says that any use of weapons of mass destruction against India, nuclear, chemical, biological, any such use on whatever scale and whether over military targets, civilian targets, environmental targets, it doesn't matter. It will draw a totally destructive and disproportionate response from India. So nuclear weapons are like that. Nuclear weapons are not oversized daisy cutters. Remember those big bombs that the Americans had used over Tora Bora, etc., to take out Osama bin Laden? He survived that, by the way. So nuclear weapons are something else. That's a different threshold. They are unlike any other weapons. What are nuclear weapons like these days? Nuclear weapons these days usually are very large. And between Russia and America, they have a very good count of their large weapons because of what survives as the START treaty, Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty. Their intelligence is not necessary. There, each side is supposed to disclose its numbers to the other. Of course, as these negotiations were going on, Ronald Reagan had used that famous line with Gorbachev, "Trust but verify." So verification mechanisms have also been built in. But these are called strategic weapons. So within nuclear weapons, there are two types: strategic nuclear weapons and tactical nuclear weapons. Just as in warfare, we say conventional warfare and strategic warfare. Strategic warfare is nuclear. Similarly, with nuclear weapons, there are two types. They are strategic ones. Usually, those are multiple kiloton bombs. Say, Hiroshima, Nagasaki size, those were 15 kilotons and 21 kilotons respectively. And I am sure all of you are smart. You know what these mean. 1 kiloton is 1,000 tons equivalent of TNT in explosive power. So 15 kilotons was 15,000 tons of equivalent of TNT in explosive power. Now you have tactical nuclear weapons, which are kind of miniature nuclear weapons, which can be 1 kiloton, half a kiloton. In fact, the smallest tactical nuclear weapon right now, which has been recorded, whose presence has been recorded, is 0.3 kilotons. So in terms of TNT, that would be a little over 300 tons of TNT. Now you might think, oh, this is much smaller than the Hiroshima bomb. But the fact is, and once again, I picked this description from the same Washington Post article, so credit where it's due, that this is the equivalent or maybe even bigger than Beirut seaport explosion that took place 2 years ago, and that caused tremendous amount of damage. In fact, that caused sufficient impact internationally for us to dedicate an entire episode of Cut the Clutter to it. Now, if you used a couple of bombs like that where the other side's military concentrations are, or over the other side's cities, this will have tremendous destructive power. But once again, response then from the other side does not have to be proportionate. Now, the fact is that Russia has any number of these weapons. Federation of American Scientists counts them at 1912. So, you know, you have enough weapons to blow up every tree in the battlefield. But where does that take you? Will the use of even one such weapon or two such weapons or five such weapons break the Ukrainians' will to fight? That is again a question to which there are no easy answers. Now, Ukrainian will to fight will also depend on what kind of response does this get from the Americans or NATO, and that is also right now being debated. And I am sure that commanders on the other side, strategists on the other side are now looking at that possibility. So what this means is that decades after the Cold War ended, people on both sides are now looking at the real possibility of a nuclear exchange of some kind. So now the question is, if Putin were to use nuclear weapons, what will he use? Well, it's unlikely that he will use any of his big missiles and big weapons. What's the point of using a 10 megaton weapon over Ukraine? He will not do that. Although Russians make the biggest nuclear weapons in the world, the largest ever nuclear explosion ever carried out was carried out by the Russians, and that was in 1961, and that was a 50 megaton weapon. Megaton is 1,000 kilotons. That was a 50 megaton weapon. That was tested in 1961. In fact, that was called Tsar Bomba. That is a Tsar of the bombs, the king of the bombs, the biggest bomb of all. But they are not going to be using any of those. They will use one of the lighter ones, the tactical weapons, and which they can use through their air force. They can use ground-launched missiles, but the experts that I read globally, they suspect that the weapon system the Russians are most likely to use in case they decide to use a nuclear weapon will be the missile called 9K720 or also Iskander, which NATO calls SS-26. Now, this missile can carry both conventional and lighter nuclear weapons. It's quite accurate. It's very difficult to intercept. And Russians have used it quite effectively. So if at all, God forbid, if at all, it'll be a weapon like this that will be used. Now, how seriously are these threats to be taken? Since this debate is raging everywhere, I find in the Wall Street Journal this quote from Andrei Baklitsky, who is an expert, a nuclear expert at the United Nations Institute for Disarmament Research. In fact, he has tweeted this, so you can see his tweet also. So he says, and I quote, "These statements go beyond the Russian nuclear doctrine, which only suggests, the doctrine suggests Russia can first use a nuclear weapon in a conventional war when the very existence of the state is threatened. That, of course, is not the case right now," right? And so he goes on to say, and I quote again, that Putin is now using different criteria, different expressions. And I quote, he's saying territorial integrity, protection of people, independence and freedom. Now, this is a very ironical situation. I mean, can there be a crueler or more supreme irony? Of course, at the cost of his fellow Russians, that a country invades another country. A big country invades another country and then says it must use nuclear weapons on them to protect his own people and his own independence and freedom. This is something unheard of, but that's the kind of state of mind that Putin right now seems to be in. Now, how has Putin come to this? So what I'm doing is, I'm not giving you a lot of detail because that will be an entire episode of Cut the Clutter, but I will run you through a bunch of tweets by a Ukrainian, a Kyiv, and a US-based expert, Thomas Tainer. And what he's done is he's drawn very good maps. And I read all the other authentic sources as well, Institute of the Study of War or all the open source intelligence sites. These accounts are corroborated, and some of this is now begun to be corroborated by Russian TV channels, Russian bloggers and others also. And these tweets show you how the Ukrainians are now cornering this big Russian force on the only piece of real estate. It's a large piece of real estate that they acquired on the Western Bank. It's the only foothill they have across the Dnieper River. Usually in conventional warfare, rivers became the dividing lines. And the stronger side then crosses the river, establishes bridgeheads, and then expands from there. So this is where the Russians had reached. This is the central place, is Kherson. It's the only regional capital that Russians had occupied, and that is where now they are being bottled up. So you can see the attacks, the Ukrainians coming from the north, from the top. Also, they are coming in more from the west. And across this territory, the big Russian foothold across the Dnieper River flows another river called Inulets. So the calculation here is that as the Ukrainians push back the Russians, and the two bridges that the Russians have, one at a dam site called Nova Kakhova, it's a big reservoir dam. Dnieper is a big river, and that's where the river is almost 5 kilometers wide. That bridge, as well as the bridge at Kherson, that is called Antonovsky Bridge, both have been heavily damaged by Ukrainian artillery. The bridge at Nova Kakhova can still take light vehicles. The bridge right next to Kherson, that is Antonovsky, cannot even take vehicles. So Russians keep on putting up pontoon bridges, and Ukrainian artillery blows it up. So Russian ability to resupply their troops, their garrison, is very limited. And if they try to escape from there now, if they try to retreat from there, they will have to come through these broken bridges. So one, they'll have to leave all their heavy equipment behind. And second, as they come to these bridges, now these bridges are fully within the sights of Ukrainian artillery. So there will be massacres. It's because Putin is so aware of this situation that he sounds so panicky right now. And if you are our regular watchers and readers, you know that at The Print, we take defense, security, military affairs, foreign affairs very, very seriously. And we take our subscribers and members very seriously, which is the reason I keep on appealing to you to take a subscription to our website or a membership on our YouTube channel. So thank you very much all for being there. For our members only, tomorrow we are hosting a member exclusive webinar at 4 p.m. So the title of this webinar would be Russia-Ukraine Conflict, Lessons for the IAF, Lessons for the Indian Air Force. So the key thing aspect from this war that we are picking up in the first seminar is, why has Russian air power failed so badly? This has stellar participants. You can see the list on my screen. Please see that. And remember, there'll be many more of these going ahead on many subjects, all the subjects that are most important to you. These will all be member exclusives. So please go ahead and take a membership of our YouTube channel.